comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. I'm here because it matters. And as a matter of fact, so do you. Don't forget, this is Friday. This is the day we send out, after the show, we start sending out the K-Files. And that's our free weekly newsletter. If you haven't subscribed, do so. It's on our website. Just go to kevinsmithshow.com and click where it says K-Files. You can subscribe in a matter of seconds. Also, check out our survival meter. Very important. And if you take a look at our webpage, over on the right-hand side, up at the top, you'll see there's a list of the top 25 countries in terms of our listening audience for January. And then under that, you see link to us. If you're a webmaster, please put our link on your webpage. We would so greatly appreciate it. Just click that. It'll take you to where you need to go. You know, very few things on this planet are as important as energy. Very, very few things are as important as energy. Most of the things that we think are important would not even exist unless we had energy, unless we had some way to power those things. There's been a lot of talk, lots and lots of talk, on the internet, on radio shows, in publications, about free energy. And in all of this talk about free energy, there have been lots and lots of speculations about whether it ever could happen, whether it's just a myth, is it just some kind of fanciful Star Trek something that people are imagining, or is it real? My guest tonight is John Searle. Professor Searle is known to many, many folks around this planet as the godfather of free energy. Now, he has developed what he has developed, and he'll talk to us about it tonight, but he's done so in the face of lots of opposition. This show tonight is a particularly important show because, according to Bradley Lockerman, who is the filmmaker who has made the film The John Searle Story, and who set up this interview for us tonight, according to him, Professor Searle has not done a major radio interview in the United States for about a decade, maybe a little more than a decade. So this is indeed a great privilege for us, and I know you'll be excited. And although this show is not a USA show, it's an international show, I'm sitting here in the USA, and it originates from here. Folks all across the country, folks all across Canada, Mexico, all the countries of South America, the UK, all over Europe, Asia, Australia, are listening. And if you think free energy is important, you need to stay tuned and hear our conversation this evening with John Searle. We have to go to break. We'll be back with John Searle right after this. And Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is John Searle. And we're going to do a little bit of an experiment here because I don't know whether he can hear me or not. Now, we tested all of this before the show, but you have to understand it's 3 a.m. He's sitting in the U.K. I'm sitting in the USA, and it's 3 a.m. where he is. We are using several telephone systems to do this hookup. I won't even explain why that's necessary, but it is necessary, and we're doing it. John, can you hear me? Okay, apparently he cannot. John, can you hear me now? Okay. So what we will have to do is let me adjust something here. All right, John, can you hear me okay? Okay. When I had you on the microphone, or had you on the broadcast equipment, I was asking if you could hear me, and I assume you could not hear me, right? Okay, so here's what we'll do. I'll use the telephone to ask the question, and then I'll switch you to the broadcast equipment, and you can answer, and the audience will be able to hear you. So it's a little bit pedestrian, but we'll do it that way, and I think it'll work just fine. So first of all, let me say that it is indeed a great privilege for us to have you as a guest on this show. It's something I've been looking forward to.
Well, I would say perhaps the opposite is true. It is an honor for me to be on your show that's so well loved by so many people.
Well, John, you have been at this free energy development now for a long time. Back in the 1960s and 70s, you were working on what has come to be known as the Searle, Searle Energy Generator, is that it?
A cell effect generator.
Okay, the Searle Effect Generator.
Yeah. Generator.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, I found a video on the... I found a video on the internet and watched it, and it was a little bit of a documentary about you, and, you know, there's a very, very interesting background to the SEG, the Searle Effect Generator. And it has to do with some dreams that you began having at a very early age. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. In fact, there's two different dreams, both related. Dream one, I term it, is the first dream that deals with me going to school. Here, the children meet up, and we have a game of hopscotch. Now, the hopscotch game is a precise layout of eight squares. It's three vertical, two horizontal, one vertical, and two horizontal. I'm always standing in square two. The pebble is always in square three. My right leg is raised to go over to square four. And everything freezes as I cross over the top of three. Now, in comes the village steamroller at the far end, coming towards me. All the children vanishes. I wake up screaming. And it's considered as a nightmare. But this will happen twice each year. And it is the clue to the mathematics which I use for the technology.
All right. Now, you started having this dream when you were 4 years old. And you had it every year for 2 years. And at what point did you realize that it was a clue to the mathematics that you need to use for the Searle Effect generator.
I was put in my first job as an apprentice to become an electrical engineer, a docket, which I took to the stores. I questioned the contents. The two and the little two at the top, the back of the large two. And the foreman said that was square two. So I said, what on earth is that? So he goes, four squares. I said, that's it. And I said, well, surely each square has a value. Oh, no, no. So I worked on this because it seemed to me strange that you could draw four squares of no value. And in the end, I just happened to find out that three squares, actually, you can do things with. So I thought, well, if the dream is showing my leg going to the fourth square, it's just saying, go to the fourth square. So I tried the fourth square, and after quite a bit of jiggery-jiggery, yeah, you could do it. You could actually put a load of random numbers into a uniform fashion. And that gave me the clue that I should look deeply at the electrical side. The film, the dream itself, was telling me that my future lay in the electrical field. And that's led me to experiment with the, what I call the law of squares, and eventually evening lessons I took with colleges eventually gave me the clue, step by step. If I had been brainwashed by education, the dream would meant nothing.
All right, now, John, you actually began building the first, your very first Searle's Effect generator at the age of 14, is that right?
Right. Well, the first one, I'm afraid, I was always taught that nothing went up unless you use some force. And therefore, it was quite safe to experiment with magnets. And I did so, and I had some outside coils to spin it up. Unfortunately, it did not conform to experts' educational standards that it wouldn't take off. It lifted up and went to the ceiling. And that was a silly thing for it to do. But my landlady had to get up and put a screwdriver in to stop the rollers running.
So your very first Searle's Effect generator, you didn't expect that it was going to take off and fly, but it did, and it went through the ceiling. Is that right?
Yes. The idea to my mind was add more weight to it. So I put a lot more weight to the base of it, and of course that was the wrong thing to do, because that only had greater force, and that broke the ceiling. I went out to the ceiling and the roof. The ceilings are only stressed for loads above, not loads underneath. And the same with the roof. It's only designed to take the stress from the outside atmosphere, not from something pushing away from the inside.
Okay, now, one of the things that I read about, and I read this on the internet actually several years ago, that there were, back in the 60s and 70s, a lot of reports of UFOs that really, in your part of the world, that really, it wasn't UFOs, it was John Searle's experiment.
Yes, we used to like having fun with the public. The reason is because I've been sent so many books on people's claims on UFOs, and I wanted to put it to the test to find out for myself how people behave if they came without warning on some object they had no ideas about. And the result I found was that people run away from it. you get a car turning up the side road, and they suddenly come in front of this strange circle object. They immediately switch gears back and start to reverse out of that area as fast as they can. The view I got was that people will run away from strange objects.
Well, and they run away from any idea that they think is strange, anything they haven't heard before, they assume it can't be correct, or they would have heard about it. And this is something I address on the show. There's more that we haven't heard about than there is that we have. There's more that we don't know than there is that we know. And this natural reaction of running away from what we don't know keeps us from moving forward.
It's a natural reaction.
Yeah, it is.
It's born in us, I suppose, from early days man came on Earth. That if you don't know what it is, get out the way of it.
Well, John, let's sort of dive into the Searle's effect generator a little bit now. I'm sure you're quite aware, because you've been doing this for decades now, you're quite aware that the experts say that there is no possibility of anything called free energy, that it's just a myth and a legend. You're aware of that. What would you say to that? Are you there, John? Well, John, are you still with us? Well, apparently, we have lost John. I'm really not too surprised by that. Let me try one more time, and then we will go to a... we'll try to get him back on the line. John, are you with us? Okay, well, we have apparently lost connection with John, and we'll get him back on the line here in just a moment. But, you know, this is one of the things, folks, that we hear all the time. We hear that it's just not reality. Free energy is just not reality. And yet, we know that there are people like John Searles. There are people like Nikola Tesla who said, indeed, it is a reality, and he built devices that tapped into free energy and used it and harnessed it and made it perform work. Well, John Searles is someone who has also developed a device that does that as well. So we get told that there's no such thing as free energy. We get told that it can't happen, it can't be. And yet we have folks like this popping up all the time. I say all the time. Every few decades or so, someone pops up that's really got a grasp of how all of this works. And they are able to demonstrate that there is such a thing as free energy. Now, the Searle's effect generator is a kind of an odd-looking device. And this Searle's effect generator, and when we get John back on the phone, we'll ask him about this, but it doesn't, you don't have to plug it into anything, okay? It doesn't require fuel in order to run. And what it we'll ask about what drives it, what causes it, but this thing starts to spin, and when it spins, it generates electricity, it generates power, and a lot of it. If it isn't anchored down, it spins and continues to increase in speed to the point that it actually will lift off the ground and fly into the air. And that's what was the cause of a lot of the UFO reports that we were just talking about. I don't I'm not surprised that our link with John was interrupted, and it was interrupted because you heard as I would push the button, I'd ask him, you know, are you still with us? And I'd push the button. You didn't hear a dial tone. And the reason you didn't hear a dial tone is because from the standpoint of our equipment, we were still connected with him. But it was interrupted where he could not hear us and we could not hear him. And I would suspect that there are people that don't want this information out there. But it is going to get out. And, you know, they should know by now that we will find ways around it. It is coming out. And it is coming out tonight. But we may have to contend with a little bit of interruption like that. But John Searles is the subject of this movie, and it's available on DVD. It's called John Searles Story. If you click his photograph on my website, if you click that photograph, what will happen is it will take you to the website of that DVD, and you can check it out. Free energy technology exists. It's not mythological. It's not Star Trek-ish. It exists. It's here. It's now. And this is, as far as I know, the only individual who has built working demonstration models of the technology. And, you know, I guess probably governments would not be too thrilled with this. Because they have to manage economies. Economies today are built on petroleum. And anything that challenges petroleum challenges the economies of governments, of countries. And that, of course, then challenges the ability of those in power to hang on to their power. So they're very powerful, important people that don't want this out. It's coming out tonight. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking with John Searles. We've reestablished contact with him, and I suspect we will probably have several episodes of interrupted talk this evening. But that's okay. We're going to get through this. John, we were talking about the SEG. And first, let me just make sure that you can hear me. Can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, let's talk about the SEG. There are experts out there, and you know this because you've been doing this now for decades, but they say this is impossible and there is no such thing as free energy. What would you say to that?
To that, of course, experts to everything state that it's impossible because they haven't done it. And the last thing they want is somebody proving that it is possible. In my case, I face this all the time and still do today. You cannot print a magnetic wave on metal. That's wrong. The SEG is a linear motor operating on a magnetic bearing. Its structure is such that it is like three auto-transformers, each one producing in its own right more energy. The first one feeds its output to the second one. The second one output goes into the input of the third one. The result coming out is like your EHT mains coming across the country that outside, you have to step the voltage down to a step-down transformer to the voltage you require. And the result is that the current is proportioned to the voltage, as in any other generators.
Okay, now I have a question about this. The SEG does not use any fuel. I've lived in places where I had to have a generator in order to have electricity. And it used either benzene, gasoline, or it used, in one case, I had a generator that used diesel fuel. But the SEG is not using any fuel. Does it have any power input, like from an electrical current that you have plugged in, or anything like that?
First of all, we are working with nature, not against nature, as we do in all conventional motors. The first thing is, within all space, there's a lot of negatives, ions floating around, nowhere to go. The idea of this is that we can move a mass in a magnetic field that has itself a magnetic field, then the lines and flux cutting conductors will induce electricity. That applies to all generators, regardless how they are fed. This sucks in the electrons from the space fabric around itself, compresses, and then releases them. That release does the work we wish to do. It's like a water wheel. You've got a reservoir of water, you've got control valves, which control the rate of release. This drops, and in dropping to the wheel, the water wheel, it picks up energy. And it's that energy that turns the axle of the power unit you're going to feed, and the water carries on as normal. Nothing is lost. All you've done is use what you picked up in energy on the fall. The SEG is similar. It collects energy as it spins round, and it gives up this energy to the coils as it passes the coils.
Okay, now, whenever you first built the SEG, the first one, and you allowed it to start doing what it does, it began to spin, and it spun faster and faster and faster, until it finally lifted off and broke through the roof. Now, what in what way could the SEG, or in what way is the SEG regulated or modified, or in some way you've fixed it where it doesn't just take off and fly like that?
Well, first of all, we were working with something which no records were made as to what would happen if we did this and that. As far as everyone concerned is that gravity was the master. What was happening here was as the SEG speeded up, so the temperature was dropping. When it reached around 4 Kelvin, the whole system reversed itself. And instead of the gravity pulling it down, it pushed it up. And because of that, I worked on giving it a body. And that's why the blind side took off first. It took time to discover how to overcome this problem of getting airborne. And of course, later scientists explained that it was superconductivity. And we had to control the speed at which the rollers rotated. And that was the secret we had to solve. And we solved that. And after that, the problem of producing energy is only with getting the magnetic field right. That is the only problem.
But then, in addition to generating a lot of power, this suggests that this same technology could be used as a system for flight like we do in airplanes today. But you could use this system as opposed to those jet engines.
Yes, yes, without question. The space work is perfect because in the atmosphere you've got to push the air away from the vehicle. But when you are in space, there's no air to push out the way, so the craft works quite happy in space.
Well, in space, do you have enough of the negative ions out there for this thing to work in outer space?
That's always plenty of energy for this technology, because what's the difference between this technology and conventional technology? You do not have to carry fuel. You do not have to burn fuel. The fuel is there. You cannot see it, but it's there. What we have done is make a converter that can attract this energy in, regardless what energy it is, and compress it and make use of it.
Okay, now let's talk about the power output of this SEG. I've shown on our TV channel, I've shown a picture of the working prototype model, and so people have seen it. And now the question is, two questions: how large is this thing, and how large does it have to be in order to generate enough electricity, say, for a household?
First of all, quite naturally, one would look at the amount of workload you want to move. The larger the diameter, the greater the load you can carry. Now, the thing is that we may be talking about 12-ton weight vehicle. Now, this weight is really near the rim of the craft. That does a number of things. Not only produce the power we need, but also stabilize the structure so that you can actually hover it in a gale force and it will just stay there. You cannot do that with an aircraft.
Okay. And this brings up the question then of, I just heard an extra click. John, are you still with us? Yeah, he's still with us. That's good. I just heard an extra click in the background, and I wondered if perhaps we'd gotten cut off again. All right, John, when you were doing the experiments where you allowed these things to fly into the air and people were thinking they were UFOs, were you able to control the flight of these things, and what is it that actually made them stop?
Of course, you cannot control that with normal radio control unit. You have to use a ham operators to give a display of these kind of vehicles, because they turn too quick and they're too fast. Now, to do demonstration of a great day, we had to have a set of ham operators set up in the area we're going to fly it.
Okay.
The configuration for the control of the craft, but also what the human being would have to put up with inside of the structure. So a lot of tests were done, the sensors, and amazing, it seemed to be that the experts agree that inside the craft, that's only half a G, regardless how fast it's traveling or how sharp it turns. And that is, of course, a very interesting point as to why should it be only half a G.
Well, were you able to come to any conclusion in your research as to why there's only half a G inside the craft?
No, we need to do a lot more research with much more modern equipment. And this is something which really is on our agenda, is to set up a laboratory, not only to develop bigger SUGs, but to also look at this flight characteristics of the disk, which is perfect for all requirements in space.
All right, so your SEG, when it's in flight, has all of the flight characteristics that are similar to what people call UFOs, right? I mean, it can make a very high-speed right-angle turn. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And when it makes this right-angle turn, there's only half a G inside of the craft.
Not only the question of how it flies, it's a question of beauty. The structure itself is a great beauty on its own. Had students we had at the site where we were constructing Demo 1, remarked that through the night, the moonlight, rays through the trees, hitting it, made it look like an alien spaceship.
How big were the SEGs that you flew?
I put a 21-meter foot craft. The generator was actually 19 and a half feet in diameter.
19 and a half feet.
It's quite some weight.
All right, we have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is John Searle, and he is known around the world as the godfather of free energy. John, the experts say it can't happen. The experts say that this anti-gravity, or actually it's not anti-gravity, but it's a levitating effect. They say that can't happen. They say half a G can't happen, but it did happen. How far are we from being able to see the Searle effect generators available?
We have got the noise online.
I'm sorry?
That is dumping your voice.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, it sounds like a pump.
Yeah, it's we're having some audio problems between here and the UK, and probably related to the tremendously bad weather we're having out here in the western United States. But how far are we in terms of time? How long do you think it will be before we see a Searle effect generator in commercial use? Well, apparently we have lost John again. So, tell you what, let's enjoy a little bit of music, and we'll reestablish contact with him, all right? And we'll be back.
Don't be out of the loop. Sign up for the K-Files e-zine at kevinsmithshow.com.
Yeah.
are back, and hopefully we've got John back with us. John, are you with us? Okay, John, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with
you. Oh, okay, very good. Now, John, the question that I have is, how long do you think it will be before we see a Searle effect generator in commercial use?
I'm sorry, we lost you.
Okay. How long, John, do you think it will be before we see a Searle effect generator in commercial use?
I'm hoping that if the USA and set up, we would probably have the SEG on test by the end of the year, but the decision has been made that we should make big ones to power the grid first, and then do the domestic ones after.
Okay, well, see, that makes sense, because what they want you to do is not... They don't want the SEG in private hands. They want it on the grid so they can run their meters and charge people for electricity. And that makes sense, because they don't want the economy to collapse.
Correct.
Okay, so it's ready as far as being technologically proven. It's ready to go as soon as someone's ready to build it and put it on the grid, right?
Right, yes.
And how much energy output is possible with the Searle effect generator? Can we replace can we entirely replace the need for petroleum products in the production of electrical energy?
It doesn't matter, is that you set a particular size, maybe 10 kilowatts, and you make a number of them, you stack them and wire them in parallel to feed the grid. The amount of power you need, it's not the problem. The problem really is finding the space to manufacture them.
Do you think that the people that are in control of electrical energy, do you think they're open to this, or do you think they are going to do everything they can to stay with petroleum?
Well, naturally I will. It's just a natural instinct to hang on to the old as long as possible. It's not a question now whether that's the right thing to do. The question I see is that we have a pollution problem which needs cleaning up. And that is the task I've been taking on, is to find a solution how that can be achieved. Of course, it still needs a bit of research work to find out how cheap we can make them. But at the moment, if we do it on the tools I used in the past, then we can start more or less as soon as I can get to the States, set up and start pushing out the first parts, engineer the first parts of the first SUG.
Have you had any talks, have you been in discussions with any of the major energy producers in the United States? And if so, have they expressed any interest in the SEG?
Well, at this time, I have not had any real interest shown. I go by what's on our web hits, which indicate that they have been watching the web.
Yeah. Of course, you want to be very, very careful, because if there's any way they can figure out what you're doing and how you're doing it, they will steal it from you.
Yes. I think what's needed here is people need to be informed in great masses that there is a technology being developed that solves the pollution problem. the effigy cannot solve all our problems because all it can do is help nature to recover. And the more we get rid of the rubbish, the easier it is for the effigy to speed up the healing process of the planet.
I agree with that entirely. And, you know, one of the things that I have said, I'm one of those people that doesn't buy the global warming theory. And I don't buy it because I believe the data has been cooked. Nevertheless, I have said frequently on this show, we need to get off of petroleum because we're pumping stuff into the air that is killing us. So my question would about pumping stuff into the air would take us quite naturally then to this. Can the SEG be used to power an automobile? Okay. Can you hear me? All right. John, can you hear me?
Now I can hear you.
Okay. Can the SEG be used to power automobiles?
Oh, yes. In fact, I'm trying hard to get America to listen to me and get a test car.
All right. We have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this.
Arizona, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Let me just check and make sure we still have John. John, are you still on the line with me?
Yes.
Okay. I had asked you a question when we went to break, and then the break took over, and I want to be sure that people hear the answer, and that is this question. Can the SEG be used to power automobiles?
Yes, the SEG is something which I tried hard to get into cars. In fact, I've been trying to get America to start the work and get a car converted. I asked John Thomas in New York, which is, that's Rochester, New York, if he can organize and encourage people to invest in such a project to install a car with the SEG as soon as we produce one, so that it can be road tested east to west and back to east non-stop. This is something no other car is able to do, non-stop.
I'm sure that you have read the stories about when Nikola Tesla developed a free energy power system that he installed in a car, and this car was test driven all around New York City. This, of course, was back in the early 1900s, but are you familiar with that?
I've just heard sort of a little bits and pieces about it, but nothing that is concrete.
Yeah, and then the newspapers, of course, newspapers tend to be bastions of idiocy, but the newspapers accused him of being in league with dark forces. So he took his equipment out of the car, took it home, dismantled it, and no one ever saw it again. Have you been maligned in such a way? Have you been accused of being in league with dark forces? Are you still with us, John?
Hello?
Yeah, John, have you been accused by the press of either being a fraud or being in league with the dark forces?
No, nothing, nothing strange. I've just been finding a team, putting a team together, teaching what to do, and we've been working on trying to understand the technology and how we can improve on it.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to, we'll continue, you and I will continue our discussion, but I want to open up the telephone lines for our audience, and if you have a question about free energy, or you have a question for Professor Searle about his invention, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. And if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, then what you need to do is either call us at 623-444-5889 or send me a flash message. And you do that by going to my website, scroll down, and you'll see the link that says flash message. Again, 623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. Professor Searle, you started working on this when you were 14 years of age. I do happen to know what your age is now. I won't tell it. It's up to you if you wish to tell it. But you've been working on this for a number of decades now.
There was big gaps in it, I'm afraid. That people were determined to stop the work, and they did their time, and recently they had another go to stop me, and I'm slowly recovering again. On whole, that length of time, you can say, in value, is only about a third of that value. At this time, I feel you can say that we're going all the way to the market, whether they like it or not.
Okay, so this time, you've had to start and stop and start and stop because people have been determined to stop the progress on this work. But you say this time, we're going all the way to the market, right?
Correct.
Okay, who has been trying to stop the development of this free energy device?
Well, mostly it's members of the team and family problems. The first instance, the family did everything to stop the work because they were afraid that if I succeeded, I would not want them. That was problem number one. In the second case, the issue was that the one man wanted to get a feather in his hat. He wanted to learn how I achieved this technology so he could copy and claim the feather in his hat for inventing it. Trouble is, the next case again was part family and part team problem, when the brother decided he could be worth millions if he took over the ownership of the technology and arranged the steel, all the equipment, because he thought all the secrets was on it. Unfortunately, I was warned by the patent office to keep one bit to myself to protect it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I admire the fact that you have stuck with this. You've stayed with it regardless of all of the opposition. Now, we have a caller on the line, and John, we're doing things really different from the way we normally do a show because of this international hookup plus the various problems from the weather out here in the West. So you may be able to hear this caller. You may not be able to. If you're not able to, I'll repeat what he says for you, okay?
Right, thank you.
Okay, here we go. We're going to put the caller on the line. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Okay. Brent, go ahead.
John, I have a question for you. Back in the 70s, supposedly, there was a guy who said that we had the technology to make the Jetsons reality, the cartoon reality of the Jetsons living in floating houses and flying cars, a reality. Could the Surly Effect generator float a house if it was big enough?
It could do if you design it for such a task.
Okay.
Okay, Brent, thanks for the call. All right. So, John, you could hear the caller just fine. It's just me you can't hear. Okay. 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. And my guest this evening is John Searle. John, you said yes, the Searle effect generator has the ability to float a house if you designed it to.
That's correct. You design an SEG to do a job.
How difficult is it to regulate the power of the SEG? John, I don't know if you can hear me. Let me ask the question again. How difficult is it to regulate the power of the SEG?
But it's all based about how much mass is in the rotation and the velocity of that mass. That sets the, what we call the cruising speed of the SEG. If you take more energy from it by loading more equipment on it, then it automatically speeds up. The problem here is that if you over exceed the velocity rate you plan it to run at, it will go superconductive and then it will lift. And then you have lost your device.
Did you lose any, back in the early days when the thing was taking off and flying, did you lose any of the devices?
Yeah, we lost the first six before we found out how we could control them.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Bradley from Los Angeles. Kevin, I think you know who this is.
Absolutely. Folks, this is Bradley Lockerman. He is the filmmaker who did the film The John Searle Story. Yeah. Bradley, thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you for the show. Hello, John. It's good to talk to you. It's good to talk to you through this circuitous route. I guess we're going around the globe about four or five times, and I was really surprised with all the gremlins that seem to be coming on the broadcast here tonight. But John, I wondered if you could address for Kevin and his audience a little more about the flying aspects. And I think what we found, what I found anyway, is that when people take a look at this, their eyebrows go to the top of their head, their jaw drops to the ground, and they're saying, oh my goodness, this can't be true. John, did you really fly these things? And can you talk about that for a little bit? Because I think it was during the 50s and 60s, and I'll get off the line while you answer, but tell them about your experiences when you were able to control it, and address the P-11 a little bit with Kevin. And Kevin, thanks so much. I'll just listen to the answer on the air.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
The IGBs, as we call them, once we learned how to control them, my task was to find out the benefits we could get from them. The key issues I found useful was photographic work. But when we had another discovery, we flew a second vehicle higher than the first one and took pictures. And that is where we got a big surprise. On top of the shell, with very bright light. Below, it was black. when we crossed the crop over trees, the underneath started producing a camouflage system. And that suggested that the underneath is like an electrical mirror. It literally gives an imitation of what is crossing over. When it passes near a cloud, it gets a sort of purpley tint underneath. But always above is a brilliant light. So the energy hitting the top is being absorbed by the FUG and converted to energy. We also know that when we dive at the structure, solid structure, the vehicle starts racing towards it, and then suddenly it shoots up. It does not hit the building. So here is proof that there's a bow wave around the vehicle. That if that bow wave gets compressed to inwards to the craft goes upwards automatically. This means that, in my mind, that a craft and the engine should ever fail, the craft would intend to remain at the point the engine fails.
Okay, so that would mean then that it would be very difficult for this craft to actually crash.
Yes, it cannot crash. That's what we prove time and time again. You deliberately try to crush it, but you cannot. There's a bow wave effect around it. And it appears that it stands off about a foot and a half on a small model to something like a meter on a big model.
Okay,
and
now,
if a car was constructed similar, it means that a car is passing, you cannot possibly pull out in front of it because the bow wave around you will prevent it until that vehicle is clear of you. Again, you could not crash in the car in front of you because of the bow wave effect. The car behind can't bump into you because of the bow wave effects.
Okay, so you have successfully flown these, and I think you said the largest one was about 19.5 feet in diameter. Would there be any reason that you could not build one, say, 100 feet in diameter?
I never caught those last words.
Yeah. You said that you have successfully flown one that was about 19.5 feet in diameter. Is there any reason why you could not build one and fly one that's, say, 100 feet in diameter?
Oh, no problem. It would even fly better. 500 feet in diameter would even be better still.
Okay. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, my name is Haya and I'm calling from Victoria, British Columbia.
Hello, and what's on your mind?
Well, I was going to ask John's a question, and also just want to make a comment as well. Back in 1955, as a child, I lived in Quebec, in Canada, on the East Coast. And friends of ours were McVicar Air. He was a ham radio, and I don't know what he did. But he had a lot of the whirly birds and, you know, vehicles, unusual vehicles in the hangars. And one of the vehicles that I noticed was a spherical machine. It was just floating in the air. I wasn't allowed to get close to it. I was told it could be dangerous, and I wasn't allowed to go underneath it because nothing was stabilizing it. That's number one. And I was just wondering if he had a vehicle at that time parked there The second one I was going to say is back in the early 80s, living in the Middle East, there was a program on, and the Russians have built one similar to the one I saw back in 55. They are making it for commercial use. Quite interesting. It's silent. It is it's easily maneuverable. They've already made it back in the 80s.
Okay, now you said your name is Heidi?
Haya.
Okay, Haya. All right, don't go away. I want you to remain there. And John, if you will, can you answer that question for her? John, did you hear the question that Haya asked? Haya?
Yes.
I think we lost John.
You've had a lot of problems lately, I've noticed.
Well, let me tell you, what he's talking about is not something that there are people that don't want that talked about. And this show goes all over the world. And
I'm aware of that, because when I was in the Middle East, they were making comments about what was happening over there. And with my parents living over here, and I was over there, I used to tell my parents all the time, who is ever telling you these lies? Because that's all they are, is lies. Mm-hmm. It's misrepresenting. So I'm aware that there's a lot of negative influences to keep these things from the public. And, you know, the people that are in control right now, they want to keep it in control.
Well, I just so you know, and the rest of the audience knows, I still have the button pushed here where we should be able to hear John. Now, if my phone had dropped him, if it was a problem here, we would be hearing a dial tone. So my equipment...
Well, actually, quite truthfully, I think somebody's been deliberately, you know, breaking the line every time there's something that's important coming on.
Well,
you couldn't put a tracer on and find out who's doing it.
Oh, it would go to what's called a black hole server. You'd never get past it. But what we're going to do is try to get him back on the line, and we'll continue. But I just want folks to know.
Especially for 1955-56, and the place was called McVicar Air out of Dorval, outside of a west end of Montreal. So, and that's when I saw the very first vehicle, and it was like a gun color. It was a metallic of some type.
Okay.
Couldn't see any doors, couldn't see any windows, but it was spherical, and it was, you know, sitting there.
All right. We're going to make one more attempt here to see if John can hear us. What's happening is between here and there, someone is interrupting and just making it so that he can't hear us, we can't hear him, but it's not disconnecting the phone line. So we'll give it another try. John, can you hear us? Okay. Well, Haya, let me ask you this. Now, the one that the Russians built, you saw this on television when you were in the Middle East?
Yes, I did. I've never seen it again. I think it was put on in the very first place because it was absolutely incredible information. But then I think whoever put it on got in a lot of trouble because they pulled it pretty quick. So there was a number of people that saw it, but then there's a lot of people who didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it was in the early 80s.
And it was a sphere.
It was spherical. It was maybe, well, if you take something a little bit bigger than the Cessna,
mm-hmm.
and if you go from tip to tail and then from wingtip to wingtip, you know, in a spherical, it wasn't completely round, it was, you know, but it was spherical, right?
Mm-hmm.
The one that they had, I noticed that they had, it was very, very smooth, you know. The only thing I could think of it, the closest I could think was some of the Billy Meyer shots, those spherical ones that they have,
mm-hmm.
except this one was a lot more streamlined, and the Russians were quite proud of it.
And they were doing this for commercial purposes.
Yeah, they were building it for commercial purposes.
Did they say what commercial purposes?
I think they were going to start using them for some of their, you know, for transporting, and I guess it was going to be like heavy equipment or business, you know, whatever they had to pick and drop in small areas. They didn't get into that. They just said they were going to be putting it to, and then they were hoping to start using them, you know, like for, you know, transporting people.
Okay, Haya, thanks for the call. We're into a break. We'll try to reestablish connection with John, and we march on. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We have John back on the line, at least we did 30 seconds ago, and we'll just have to see if he's still able to hear us. And to the caller that's on the line, if you will, just hold on. We'll get to you in just a moment. John, the caller that was speaking just before you got cut off the line was asking if, number one, she said that back in the late 50s, early 60s, at McVickers Air Field in Montreal, she observed a sphere that was just floating off of the ground in a hangar, and she wondered if you had any of your craft at that airfield back then.
No, I'm sorry. I never had nothing there at that time.
Okay, and she said the Russians, she saw this when she was living in the Middle East, and the there was a program on television where they showed a very similar craft that the Russians had built, and that they were very proud of it, and they were going to start using it for commercial purposes. Have you heard of that?
No, I'm afraid I haven't.
All right, let's go to the telephone, and we have a caller online. And caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, Kevin, it's Mike from Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing tonight?
Good.
Based on what I was hearing there from your last caller, this sounds exactly like the Russian cosmospheres that were developed in the early to mid 1970s, and they worked off of some type of electric drive, just like these things that he's talking about.
Okay. And what do they use them for?
Well, they used them mainly for military back then. Back when the Cold War was going on, they had like a fleet of 200 or 300 of them, and they would just put them up, and they would hover almost indefinitely above the earth, anywhere they put them. A lot of the explosions, you know, that we heard about appearing off of the east coast of the United States that were attributed to UFOs, allegedly, and I say allegedly, were caused by these cosmospheres as they would move about.
Hmm. John, have you heard of those? Have you heard of those Russian cosmospheres?
No, I've no indication whatsoever on that subject.
Yeah, I've heard of them, but I've never been able to find any details about them. Well, Mike, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
All right. 623-444-5889. We have a message from Bob in Australia, and he says, could the SEG work as a power source to travel to other star systems? So what do you think, John?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear exactly what was said.
Okay, we have a message here from Australia asking if the SEG could work as a power source to travel to other star systems.
Well, that would be perfect for that type of work.
Okay. Let's go to the telephone line, And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, I have a quick question for the guest.
Okay.
It's my belief that there's enough energy in one atom to do limitless things almost, if utilized. Does the guest think that there's enough energy in one atom to not only propel something faster than the speed of light, but also is it proven already? Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, every atom has enough energy to find objects. It is putting that energy out under control that is the problem. The HEG is doing just that. It tunnels the energy slowly out of the atom, and it's using that for its propulsion of the mass around the plate. It's a tunneling effect.
So you could take one atom and power a city, if it was possible, to control the flow of energy out of that atom. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. If you could, after all, you look at an atomic bomb, the immense energy that's released. If that was controlled in a stream like you're controlling water, then you could power a whole town or city from the atom.
Now, what you're doing, your technology, though, has nothing to do with splitting atoms. It just has to do with the flow of the atoms, right?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. So there's no problem with any kind of radioactivity, right?
Right.
All right, so what you have proposed is, and what you're building is safe, it's clean, and it doesn't require fuel to run it. Am I correct?
Yes.
All right, if it's safe and it's clean and it doesn't require fuel to run it, you would think that some government somewhere would say, that's exactly what we need. Let's get this guy over here and get started building this. But they haven't done that. Why do you think there seems to be either reluctance or a lack of interest by governments?
First thing is that you are not consuming any material which can be sold to you. If I was burning twice as much fuel per hour than the present generator, they would probably go for it, because it would mean tax increase, money coming in by sale. The problem with the SUG is there is no income from the time you bought the machine to the time you pass on. There's no income coming to the government from it. And therefore, the government is not interested in such devices.
Okay. So let's say that governments are not going to be interested in this. That would mean that power companies who have to deal with the government may have problems with the government if they decide to use the SEG. The government may say to the power company, well, we can't get any taxes off of the oil because you're not using oil anymore, so we're not going to allow you to use the SEG. Have you given any thought to that possibility?
Yes, I've been looking at this. That would mean that we have to go to home domestic units. And because you'd have to set up so many lines about to put the output needed to meet demand, that's why we really take a liking to feeding the grid first, to get the power stations closed down to this clean technology. Of course, I think the governments will put a bit of pressure on the poor people not to use it. It is the public that's got to stand up and say, we want it in the millions, not just one or two. That's not good. It's the masses that must shout, we want clean energy. We do not want nuclear power. We don't want coal power. We want something that is clean but cheaper to run. And the only answer I can see on the market is the SUG when it hits it.
Okay. So let's say we're going to go to the home domestic units. How expensive would one of these units be if I wanted to purchase one for my home? How much money would it cost me?
Well, at the beginning, of course, it would be more. We would expect probably around $3,000 to $4,000. What you've got to consider is that once you install it, there's no more costs involved. Not a cent. And that in itself in a few years is worth the cost of buying. When we get mass of production lines running and we have buying tons and tons of raw materials to make the parts, then the price of the FUG will become less. Like in all production lines, the first few are expensive because the sheer cost of setting up to do the job. But if the public is with us and really helped to push this, I think within a year or two, the price of an SUG would become less.
Okay. Now, this, I think, is a very important point. The SEG will work just fine whether there's sunlight or darkness. It doesn't depend on the sunlight. Is that right?
That's it. It's independent of all conditions.
Okay, so if it's sunshine or dark, if it's hot or cold, doesn't matter. The SEG works.
It doesn't matter at all.
Okay. Now, the reason...
It runs cold in any case. Like the cold weather don't make the difference.
All right, so if I had an SEG at my house, and by the way, for those who've tuned in late, SEG stands for Searle Effect Generator. If I had an SEG at my house, and then all of these cataclysms happen that people are predicting for 2012, if all that happens and the power grid goes down, I've still got electricity at my house, and I can still cook, have lights, heat, etc. Everything I need. Is that right?
That is correct. You'll be laughing that you are powered up and they're not.
Okay. Now, in that case, I would think there would be a gigantic market for the SEG. How big, physically, how big would the unit have to be for my house?
Well, you're looking at roughly a meter squared. You'd set it in as part of the wall and forget about it. Your family will forget about it. Their family will forget about it.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back. And we are back here at the Kevin Smith Show. It is, in fact, a very, very momentous show tonight because we are talking with John Searle. He is the godfather of free energy. He has developed and tested a device that does draw energy just out of the atmosphere that's around it. And there's nothing magical about this. It's very scientific. It draws the energy. John, you said it's very much like a water wheel, where the water flows down onto the wheel, causes it to turn, which turns the axle, which turns the machinery inside. Perhaps it's a power generator. Well, this doesn't use water. It uses the charged particles in the atmosphere. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay, now, using the charged particles in the atmosphere, it's never going to run out of charged particles, is it?
Never run out.
Okay, so, you know, we have a limitless supply of charged particles in the atmosphere. Would there be any negative effect upon our atmosphere or upon our magnetosphere of the Earth if all over the planet people were using SEGs?
Now, all we do is to clean up the atmosphere in the process, because as the particles release their energy, if that's the word, they continue on their way, just like the water flow. It continues on. In the case of the SEG, the electrons now free again in the room will be redrawn in and built up their charge again as they pass through the SEG, and they will deliver this charge to the circuit and continue on their way just like water does. It's an identical image of water in motion.
Okay, so it would have no negative effect upon the Earth's magnetosphere?
Nope, no.
All right, now we were talking about the use of the SEG for domestic home use. And we were talking about how much would one of these units cost. You said $3,000 or $4,000 in the beginning, but as production increases, then the price would fall, which is normal. But then how long will an SEG work before it needs any kind of maintenance?
Well, to be honest, as long as you don't interfere with it, it should never need anyone to carry out maintenance on it.
So it should never, never need maintenance, right?
No, never, because there's no wear, tear, or friction involved in the system.
Now, you said the home unit would be about a meter square, right?
Yes.
So that's roughly 3 feet by 3 feet, roughly. That's not huge, and just about any home has a place where they could put a unit like that. Are there any dangers associated with an SEG?
I am having trouble to hear you.
Okay, are there any dangers, any side effects, any dangerous things associated with the SEG?
No. In fact, for a housewife, it's beneficial. If she scolds herself, she will feel relief almost instant from the pain. And she will notice that in the next hour or two, the scolds will gradually show signs of healing. Now, I know that to be true because I have been scolded a few times as to demonstrate to the public that the SEG is a very useful device for health reasons in burns. It eases the pain and speeds up the healing process. I was in an explosion. My face should be terribly disfigured, but it's not. Had I not had the SEG, I would certainly would have to wear a mask to avoid making people feel sick looking at me. But I can proudly look at anyone straight in the eye without any fear of them feeling sick looking at me. There's no trace now after a few years of sunlight treatment can you see any trace of the damage that was done?
Do you have to like stand very close to the SEG to get that healing effect?
Well, you do have to be close to get the speed of the effect, but the room is actually clean of dust. All your dust is on the floor. The dust float around the room, it has to be in a positive charge state. In a negative charge state, which the SEG creates, the dust cannot float. As bacteria and viruses travel on dust, they're not moving now on the floor to back them up. So you have a very clean room, and it is cool. And in fact, to explain what it's like to be sitting near such a machine, it's like drinking fresh, pure spring water. It's cool. It's a lovely taste. You have to experience it before you realize how beautiful that output is from that machine.
Well, I'll tell you something, and this may have nothing at all to do with the SEG, but I think it might. I think it might be similar. I was at an exhibition several years ago, and there was a man demonstrating the power of magnets. And he had some special magnets that you could put on the side of a can of fruit juice. Now, what he did is he opened a can of Welch's grape juice, poured it a little bit into a cup, and asked me to taste it. I tasted it. It tasted like grape juice, but it had sort of a tart quality to it. Then he placed the magnets around the can and left them there for 10 seconds or so, took the magnets away, poured the same juice from the same can into the same cup, and asked me to taste it. And all of that tart quality was gone. There was nothing but just sweetness. And it was absolutely amazing how much better it tasted. Now, is that something similar to what you're talking about?
Yes, yes. We do not appreciate the benefits of magnetism. I always look at magnetism as equal to light. As you know, the spectrum of light has seven different bands. I believe that each band has its own magnetic frequency. And what we have done is tap one of them, possibly the blue band. If so, if that is proven during future research, that is true, that I believe we are the first people that have actually proven that the spectrum of light is also equal to the spectrum of the magnetic band.
And I think that would be very, very critical research for someone to do. I think that's important. John, we're just out of time, and I want to thank you for being with us. We thank you for putting up with getting your phone interrupted, you and I have persevered, and we have done the show, and I appreciate so much the fact that you were here with me on the show. I want to remind everyone, if you click the photograph of John on my website, it will take you to the website of the John Searle story. John, stay on the line with me for just a moment, and we'll talk. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.